out of your shot?
Oh, no, no, you're good.
Is it, like, do you want me to be, like, speaking to you? Just talk to you. Perfect. Sounds good. So
just to give you an idea, we'll probably come back at some point and find a place that's quiet, controlled environment to, like, do a longer interview.
For sure.
So this is just more of, like, informative background to get rid of you showing off the place. Don't feel like every little detail of the history needs to be there. It's more just kind of give us the idea of what we're looking at here and what we've got going.
Sounds good. Yeah. Also with that, I'm happy if we, you know, meet in Eau Claire or something for that, we can figure that out. But awesome. So this is where everything starts. This is where our fish are. Two 1,000 gallon tanks. And when we first started this, both me and my partner Trent have a background in growing plants. I was a third generation greenhouse owner. Trent was a dairy farmer. And we knew we wanted to start something based off local food production. And we first were kind of heard about land-based fish farming through places like Superior Fresh, Aqua Bounty, a couple bigger salmon farms. And then we were interested in salmon farming, but found out that to start in salmon farming, you needed that economy of scale, potentially millions of dollars, which in our early 20s, we weren't in a position to start that. So then we just looked, okay, what other fish are options? How do you start it at a scale that works for us? So aquaponics, we saw some smaller aquaponic facilities that we figured, you know, that's a scale that could work for us. We didn't really want to use tilapia. Tilapia are really common in aquaponics. They're, you know, Nile tilapia, so origins in Africa, which we didn't really feel great about bringing that into a pristine environment in our local Wisconsin waters. So we wanted a Wisconsin fish. First fish we had an idea of was that yellow perch out of Green Bay, because that was the original Wisconsin fish fry. We started off raising 200 yellow perch, and they say you're not fish farming until you kill some fish. I said, I'm not going to kill any fish. Pretty quickly, I killed 198 of those perch and had two really nice perch left, but I figured, you know, maybe we've got to try something else. The perch, you can raise them in aquaculture, but they don't take to the feed quite as well. Their temperament is a little bit jumpier. They like to jump out of the tanks or get in a tube of the system if they can. Whereas the walleye are just a little bit more chill. They like a little bit of cloudy water occasionally. They don't like the lights being right on them. They do great at 70 degrees, which is what you can feel it in our building right now. It's 40 degrees outside, 70 degrees in here. Great for our plants, and that's where our fish are happiest at as well. And the whole thing with fish is, if you're wondering about how happy are they, how good are they doing, it's all based off the feed. If there's any sort of if the fish are stressed, they're not going to eat. So when they're happy, that's when you see them munching on the food. That means they're doing good, they're feeling good.
So how many do you have, and do you just jump up on here? Is that how you look at them?
Yeah, so, and it's pretty cloudy right now, so you really can't see too much. But we have about 1,000 fish in here, a couple hundred in here. These ones are our younger cohort, so these are a little bit under a year. These guys are a little bit under 2 years old. So these ones, average fish is about 10 to 12 ounces. And in here, we have some that are up to 2.5 pounds. So not quite as big as what we saw at NADF yesterday, not quite as big as what's in the Menominee River, but really proud of getting them to that size and getting it to, you know, market size. And once we get it there, and if you compare that with how long it takes in the wild, it's about 20%. So it's about a little over, it's a year and a half rather than 5.5 years to get them to that 1 pound size. Once we raise them, and throughout their life, they're producing all of our nutrients for our plants. And once they're ready, once they're that market size, we put them in a purge system over here. So that is straight flow through system of well water. We'll give the fish a little bit of Epsom salt, and that cleans them out, just like it would me and you. and then they're left with nothing in their body. They go for 3 or 4 days in straight well water, perfectly clean fillets. We know what they've eaten their entire lives. It's this pelleted feed. So that's 55% protein. So you keep the growth rates up. You keep them producing a bunch of nutrients, and they're just very healthy fish because of that. Canadian fish food, so the economy is pretty interesting right now. We're working on a couple of companies to try to get a walleye blend of food that's domestically produced, because there is a non-proprietary blend that's out there that's been done. Someone just needs to take it on. So we're kind of working on connecting enough companies where that order is enough scale for those producers to produce it. But once, so the fish are living in here, and their water is recirculating. Clean water comes from our AST filter and comes back after being filtered. And then you see a small valve over there. We can go around and see that, but you open that valve, and that's what brings our concentrated nutrients from our fish into our plant loop. And then we have kind of 3 more rounds of filtration, so that by the time it gets to our plants, we have no fish food solids in there. It's all soluble nutrients. So food safety wise, that's really good, and just standard operating procedures wise, so we don't get all clogged up in our tubes and our towers and everything. We have the same strain, so these are all from the NADF facility. So a Chippewa strain of walleye. We have seen, we started off raising a Green Bay strain of walleye. It's gonna be really interesting to see. I'm hoping NADF gets their funding and does this study on comparing the different strains of walleye. You know, the agricultural industry has been doing this for hundreds of years, picking the right cow, picking the right corn. Now we're working on picking the right walleye that really suits raising like this. We also hope to eventually get into stocking, so the strains end up being very important, because the DNR wants to keep strain-specific walleye in specific bodies of water, so that if a walleye strain has produced in there, they figure they want to keep that strain consistent. New tank's gonna go right over here, so we gotta make some room. My grandpa made this coat rack, which we'll keep in here, and he'd be too disappointed if not, but we'll make some room, and then that'll get us quite a bit more production capability. That'll turn off in a second. Our big fish are our athletes. They're the hardest to net, so when I just blindly scoop in there, I'm probably gonna get some smaller ones, but there's a chance I get a big one. And they're gonna splash a little bit. Here's a couple of our. So those are all just under what we would harvest right now. So it's probably just getting to a pound. I know the spot they like to hang out. I'll try to get them. Get a big one. Be a nice one that we put in the perch system right now. Probably just under 2 pounds, I would say this guy is. But you get that nice color. They're kind of a consistent, based off strain, that's kind of where you see the strain differences in the color mostly. But yeah, real happy with the size, belly, fillet yield. About half of this fish weight will be in fillets. And this feed is trickling in 24 hours a day. So walleye within there, they do have their own personalities. Like I said, your bigger ones are more your athletes. You're kind of your bully fish a little bit too. They'll eat first. So the idea is, yeah, food trickling in there, all day long, so the bully fish get full, and then the other fish get a chance to eat. That way you're not dealing with any nipping. When walleye are young, you do have to worry a little bit about cannibalization, so that the constant feed helps, and when they're really young, you might add a little bit of clay to the water to actually make it a little bit more murky for them to make it harder to find each other. Those are about that $800-$900, so all real similar per square foot to a single family home, what we produce in, or what we burn in electric and heat. And a big reason for that, like you mentioned, the insulation helps out, having the lights and having the water. Water in the building is a source of, you know, insulation or ambient heat that stays in here. With the electricity is we have our lights on light movers. So that way it's just kind of trying to mimic the sun, you know, varying degrees of intensity throughout the day. Whereas if you just had one LED light, that plant would want to go straight towards that light, long and leggy, not much yield, not as healthy of a plant. Where you get varying degrees of intensity, it grows out every which direction. Our plants are really largely based off the nutrients that we get from our fish. We have to add calcium and potassium because the nitrification process of our fish, the pH is always lowering. So we need to bring that up, and yeah, we kind of get two birds stoned at once because we give them those nutrients, potassium and calcium. That's a good add to aquaponic water anyway, and we're raising the pH. The one nutrient that kind of has to be added in and of itself that's not necessarily another benefit is iron. Just randomly, the fish don't really produce iron, the plants need it. But you see here, so part of the reason why I say we need to be very serious about our filtration is just how skinny our lines get here. If we had any sort of solids in there, it would get clogged up really easily. Each one of these has a float valve in it, so there's about 20 gallons of water in here. One tower will use about 1 gallon of water per day. The float valve opens up, we trickle water in, and then there's a sump pump in the bottom of there that, as you see going on right here with our baby rosemary, sends water to the top, trickles down, and then it's off for about 40 minutes, so you get that really nice flood and drain where the plants actually get a little bit thirsty. And that's also kind of representative of where these plants came from. A lot of the herbs are Mediterranean in origin, so they're used to a sandier soil. They get heavy rain, get dried out for a while, and so we're kind of replicating that here. So we're able to grow, you see some rosemary up here on this tower, sage, thyme over here. So all those stickier, more woody crops we're able to grow on the towers. And then kind of a wide variety beyond that too. Tomatoes we're able to do, and the fish really produce mostly nitrate. So that's, nitrate is what you need for vegetative crops. So that's your before fruiting or flowering, or, you know, if it's a crop that doesn't fruit or flower. So all your herbs, all your salad is in that boat. But our fish water has actually produced enough nutrients where we can produce pretty nice and great tasting tomatoes too. Just cherry tomatoes because we need to support them on the towers, but we've been pretty happy with the taste anyway. And then you see kind of over here on the other side, that's our deep water culture unit, and that's kind of more common to use for aquaponics, hydroponics, just that trough of water. It's a little bit simpler of a system and can work for a lot of different crops. We have our mint in there, it does amazing, but for us, the towers allowed for a little bit more food safety, more variety, and just a little bit more control with what we could do. And it keeps our towers keep the water more separate from the actual plant, because it is fish water at the end of the day. So keeping it separate, no contact there, just very food safe is the name of the game for us. But we are, you know, just like our fish water is being recirculated, our plant water is being recirculated, our air is moving around, all indoor, and the reuse of everything, the main lesson we've learned is just keeping everything super clean, disinfected both fish and plants, because you know, you just need biological life to grow. You can't let other bad biology get in the way of that. Every indoor grower is going to deal with bugs or disease or mildew of some kind, so it's just finding ways to stay ahead of that. And mostly it's keeping clean, keeping everything super, you know, keeping these fans on us. It feels good for us, and just like us, when the plants get a little bit, they can breathe a lot better. Hopes to expand the fish sometime soon in the next couple years, and that probably looks mostly like a focus on expansion in the walleye and keeping kind of still reaching the capacity here. So eventually we will have more nutrients than we are able to use, so it could mean something else, bottling up that nutrients, giving it to a community garden or something like that. A number of different ways you could handle it. There's a cornfield right out our door too. But
at some point, someone will market fish fertilizer. It's like
we wouldn't be the first ones to do it, yeah. For sure. I don't know if I told you in that studying of perch at first. So we talked to a Madison professor named Terry Berry. Great name. He was an aquaculture professor, I believe an aquaculture professor, maybe just a biology professor. But he said he had a similar system to ours, recirculating, but in one tank he had northern pike and in another tank he had yellow perch. And he found out that when the northern pike had some sort of predation, the yellow perch responded by doubling their growth rates.
Yeah.
It's just like incredible, you know, when you're in the way of, you need this fish to grow as fast as possible to make your margins, whatever. I said, do walleye do that? Like, no. Unfortunately, they don't.
No, panfish do that. It's a chemical that's released when one of them's eaten that tells the others around it, grow faster, get bigger, I just got eaten.
Some sort of pheromone or
yeah,
something.
Something that's released into the water.
Yeah.
That's why a lot of fishermen will say, oh, a lake can get stunted, where the, especially the bluegills will never grow past a certain size. You got to introduce a bigger predator to eat them to get them to grow. The right idea, but the wrong, you know, methodology of what actually is happening.
Right.
There. It is the same. You need the predation for them to tell each other to grow bigger.
Right.
Without the predator present, then they simply reach a size that they're comfortable with, and then they don't get bigger.
They need that pressure, yeah, that drive. And it's so, yeah, I figured it had to be something like that, because he said whether the pike was in the same tank or not, it wasn't like the perch didn't have to see it.
Nope.
You know. But yeah, walleye are enough of an apex predator where they're not necessarily going to do that, but just cool stuff that you learn along the way, especially learning like us. You end up the, you know, YouTube, Google Scholar, talking to these research facilities instead of getting more of a formal education. You end up with a lot more adjacent things that you learn, for better or for worse. It's cool to have a mix, though. And you see, you kind of hear, we have some power washing going on, dissembling towers. We just got done with the harvest today, so you see over here, those are a couple romaine towers that the further ones we might be harvesting from for our local customers tomorrow. The other ones are just harvested from. We need to unload those, soak them, power wash them, reassemble them so they're all perfectly clean. Very labor intensive, but that's how we grow our good crops. So, and you see here we have some microgreens, broccoli micros, cilantro, romaine, basil. Someday I'd like to figure out strawberries, but it hasn't happened yet. Need to clean them up as you go almost after every harvest. Chives are one thing, chives and parsley both. You'll see the towers get a little caked on, but the plants do really well. They're able to keep cutting and coming again.
for whatever reason, they're really able to reproduce really well and stay really great products for a long time in the tower.
Some more basil over here. We have our dill section here. Another one that you can cut and come again quite a few times. Do you guys want to go over and see kind of the germination area?
Yeah, I mean, you just want to get some...
Yeah. No, the... I'm kind of in it for the same ideas along the way and the motivation and influence on, like, little kids and, like, how many engineers and scientists did we have because of the moon landing. And same thing, like a lot of these people that are interested in science. But a huge, huge debatable topic. It's really interesting to debate. You know, there's the Tasmanian tiger that they say is really necessary to be back because Tasmania, what is species? And is it a dire wolf or is it just a wolf with some new traits or, you know, whatever. We've been doing it about every 2 weeks, right out of the circulating system and out of the purge system. Mind you, it's only 4 people, but no one can tell the difference. So, kind of interesting that way, where salmon, it's quite a big deal to get the purge right, and it could even be 3-4 weeks sometimes, which they even start to come down to Menominee on Wednesdays. No, we don't have a facility. You need your, you know, stainless steel, all that stuff. But we do have a licensed kitchen now back here. So we're able to do, we need the retail food license just to be able to sell them. So we need that. But then we're also able to utilize more plant products to put them into jars. So pesto's, filling you in on this yesterday too, then the same way with the plants, we're trying to use all of it.
So what?
Yep, yeah, we do 2 fillet packs. And it is new, you know, you look online, if you walleye direct frozen,